or what sex. Innately, you know that God is of no color, because God is all. In the oneness with you. So you are going to reflect whatever your attitude is about God. And I think you understand what this alien, get that, alien, gray, darkness is all about. This is why they come in and they call it the Judeo-Christian religion. Two opposites. Two opposites. Impossible. But not anymore, is it? They just form up everything so that it meshes here in the middle. And always the Khazarian Zionist element on top. Number one. And these things happen. They try to make their tracks really heavily during their, quote, holy days. And you will find that they always coincide with satanic holidays. And then they take your holidays and they set them up for you. I tried to write a little bit on that very subject this week. In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea. With a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. How so? It wasn't that way in December in Bethlehem, where you had Easter lilies. Somebody wrote a song. Period. And the glory, or the grace, or the truth, perhaps, in the bosom of this man, could offer hope of some transfiguration for yourself. But this is no savior, except for himself. And he went through a hell of a lot of misery to tell you that. That there is infinite life, there is eternal life, but you got to do it yourself. So now we're back to talking about the entire multitudes of this so-called false Christianity waiting for a rapture that hasn't the vaguest idea what you're about. Waiting for somebody else to do it for you. And isn't it interesting that there's always someone there to tell you they can do it for you? And tell you how it is, and even argue. And if you disagree with them, they will tell a Semite, which I am, and you are, that you're anti-Semitic. Because I haven't the vaguest idea what it means, except it is a war word. And then they try to keep their little war chants secret as long as they can. You will note the comedians have a right to get up and be as vulgar and crude and nasty and everything else about the Jews as they can get in the gutter. But you have a nice little white boy get up and just say Jew, and you're anti-Semitic. It's the game. Satan is shrewd. Satan is cunning. He is the king of deceit, confusion, and chaos. And these are his tools. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with those Judeans of honor and integrity. And this new group of, let's call them false Jews. You see, there's no real thing to call them. They don't let you call them anything. They usurp every decent word and ruin it. And it isn't from Palestine or Russia or Mongolia. These are heinous beings of every race and color. It is not the time of the races rising against each other in the higher level of God's universe. It is plainly evil versus good. And therefore, you will find in a world that has started out very good in its intent, or at least in this nation, its intent originally was pretty good. But I have to give you the second act of the play. Earth was no more than any other planet housing beings for soul representation, growth, learning, growing, graduating, rising, and moving on. So guess what you have? You have multitudes of gray souls entering, experiencing, growing, or sinking. But you will find that most of those energy forms were from onset of their experience on your place as bad as they are now. Because as you move on, you start at whatever level you left off. And if you don't grow, God can offer all the grace there is for you, but it's offered in opportunity. And if you think my message, well, let's just say if Gary thinks his message goes over badly in Ventura, but my message goes over very, very big in the lands away from here that have been corrupted by this influence to the point of total separation. And you see, these guys go a little bit further. Let's sanction this country over here or that one because they don't agree with us. And we will allow no news out of there. And we will just go bomb them as Mr. Reagan did Gaddafi. What the hell do they dare mean? Brent Scowcroft wants to do away with the law that was put into play to keep individual CIA agents and other people from going and killing heads of state. Well, I think it's a damn good idea starting in the United States. But I don't think Saddam Hussein likes it much. And look what's coming out of the Kurdish problem. Has anybody noticed? The man who goes up and asks Saddam to help him now is a double agent for the United States CIA. You have spent over $100 million trying to bump off Saddam Hussein through the Kurds. And they don't even want Saddam to go up there in his own country of Iraq. Now that guy is running like hell back to the United States. Protect me from Saddam. I don't blame him. And by the time it hits your news, it looks like you're saints and they're evil. Only it doesn't. It looks like you're idiots. It looks like you're idiots. And one say, well, how could you or God go to the enemy? Who is the enemy, my friend? Who is the enemy? You've lost sight of who is the enemy. You wave your flag and say, anyone against me is my enemy. No! You are your enemy. And Alan Dershowitz said it best. They don't want a little homeland in Israel except the pipeline and control of the people and their souls. They have pronounced publicly the United States of America is the new homeland of Israel. Only they mean the Zionist Israelis, not the Jewish people of Judea. Just as many of those holy places were in other places than Jerusalem. And just as many evil places were there at the time of your Jesu, your Joshua, your Emmanuel. There was so much evil afoot that it would have seemed it could get no worse. And now for the bad news. Listen to your prophecies. When the human can walk across the Euphrates, beware. So they put in a dam. Armies can march across the Euphrates. All you've got to do is stop the water. And who are the people that in your traditional prophecies will come against the Israelis? Mongolia. The Chinese. And what's more, the elite of the world know it. Here, a few years back, after Mandela got out of prison, Mongolia offered no interest, no repayment, offered $500 million to build low-cost housing for those suffering masses in South Africa. And nobody took it. Does that tell you? This world is so politically orchestrated to be taken, and there is some amount of struggle between this New World Order and these Khazarian banksters, but they're so in bed that it really doesn't matter, you see. They figure they can sort that out later. Well, they better start sorting. They have 4 years. We have 4 years. And I got more to work with than they have because I've got truth. And that's just flat the way it is. And if it requires further creation, we can do it. God can create. God can create. And we who dwell with God can create. They can only tamper, deceive, usurp and destroy. For goodness sakes, seize your God power and help us. But it means some of you are going to have to step forward and help yourself. You can't wait. Nobody is going to do it for you, including me. The most we can do is offer the tools, and you got them. And I think that E.J. and Rick should hear me carefully, because I don't think the full understanding has reached its destination. There are five times as much available as the one document. And they don't know that. And if they can do what they think they can do with one, what do you think they can do with five? And don't anybody mention patriotism to me. I am a patriotic chauvinist for the nation of God and truth and honor and integrity. And too much blood has been spilled by our people. And you better get ready, because the wave will come, and it will come from the darker skinned races. The white race has been usurped, mongrelized, not by dark-skinned races, by the very reflection of themselves. So when a white Aryan stands up and says, "White power," he is full of garbage. Don't think for one moment the Zionist races, the Khazarians, consider themselves anything other than white and superior to you. And you're not white. There's not anybody in this room that is pure white. And the interesting thing is, you both bleed red blood, don't you? So we have to stop putting limitations on God. And we have to start looking at a nation that is basically already lost. But the more lost it is, it's like decay and compost. Sometimes the best growth comes out of a compost heap. Because until man, it's like the alcoholic or the addict. Until they are in the gutter, they see no reason to be better. And then it's either die or come up and get hold of yourselves. And you will be amazed at how many will come up and get a hold of themselves. And if they become too uncomfortable in your presence, they will eventually go away if you don't capitulate. And if you stand forth with your God power and tell them you are a liar, a cheat, and a thief, and stop playing these ridiculous games of, "Well, I mustn't offend anyone." What are you talking about? Offend. If I have no more faith and belief and truth in God than to not want to offend, then I certainly don't need this job. But you can damn well bet I'm going where I get help. And where you get protection. And there is an amazing amount of things that we can do outside the United States to save what's left of the United States for its sovereignty. And one of these days, the Gary Weens of the world, the Vena Durhams of the world, the Rodney Stitches, the ones who've not been able to see the vision and a world in reclamation and have just hung in there and hung in there and hung in there for these snipers to stand back and insult. They are not worthy to be under the feet of this man. But guess what? Gary's going to have a little reward also. And it's going to be better, Gary, than just a little pineapple shortcake and plugged ears.
I'll settle for Rut right now.
We're moving along. It may not seem it day to day, but when you think where you were 10 years ago and where you are today, it may not look much different. But I want to tell you, you have turned the world around. And what you're not getting in your country except as a put down, I want you to know that this day, across the world, there is for the first time, just about in this millennium, that there is hope. And they see it. And that is worth champagne. And even John walked in here too. But I want everybody to know it's probably because he went out with three women last night. Beat your heart out, Wally. Even Audrey's taking a stand. I am so pleased. My goodness, what's the matter with you people? I can't believe what you allow. Rod McBroom finally sends Robbie. Robbie is a cockatoo that belongs to John. It took years to get Robbie back with no cage. Robbie had a magnificent cage, as nice a cage as any bird ever owned. And so after years now of quarreling over getting the cage, Rob McBroom sends a cage. And Eric goes down to pick it up, and it's an old rusty junk pile.
It's like something he found in the dump.
He probably did. But it's not acceptable. And so maybe Audrey and Eric will hang in there, and they just send a bill to Mr. McConnell or O'Connell or whatever.
Eric's already done it.
We have to help each other stand up when the forces are against us. And I want to tell you that force in Nevada is struggling. They are risking everything in their careers and their future and their present. And they're doing it in the lie. And it gets worse and worse and worse. But you people allow it to continue. You're never going to get the Schroffer case settled in Nevada until John says, I am Mr. Schroffer and I don't have a case there. And neither does she. And then you throw those evil bastards out of the courthouse.
Smells like a fish in there.
Really dead.
Dead, stinky old.
This is the greatest thing, the most exciting thing that's ever happened in that courthouse. And someone who is running for judge, who has worked with Abbott for years, said he's always been that way. He's got everybody intimidated. How can you intimidate through the lie unless you get in there and you have something to blackmail with? Come on. Quit running scared from these nothings. When your attorneys understand they're working with truth, that's something no attorney has been able to understand, is that these people here have truth. Well, we don't want to bring up anything in that area. Why don't you? We don't want to mention Jason Brent because. Why? These are what has sold out your nation and your people. And will sit across a deposition table and say to Dorma, anti-Semitic. In a deposition, how dare they do that? Because you try to live in your own house? Well, he also said he didn't do a lot of things. But his name's on a lot of things. So it can only get better. Each time you think you've lost a round, no, you haven't. You've gained a little time to uncover more of their transgressions. And it seems like a long time a-coming. But Judge Clark is going to get his, too. You can't haul cocaine back and forth in cow bellies. And you can't haul it back and forth in dead chickens and fish meal and call it Zapata oil and Zapata beef forever. And I'm really concerned. Lyndon LaRouche gets up and he does his preaching now in favor of Bill Clinton. What are we doing, Lyndon? The rest of your story's okay, but he has a point. The enemy of Clinton is also the enemy of himself because both seem to rest over here politically with Bush. And yet you're going to have a major, major Jewish element versus the bankster element. You don't realize it. But at this higher level now, once you have your New World Order, oh, watch them then as they try to decide who's going to run everything. And meanwhile, back in Mongolia, the troops are already gathering. And you will never have seen such a sea of humanity. And let us pray that somebody doesn't do something really stupid. I think we better consider a break, Gary.
Could Gary just briefly say something about Mr. Goldman that you were getting around to?
Yeah.
And how
oh,
he,
yes,
how he's
his family, what he's about.
Sure.
You got to turn the light on that flashlight.
Oh,
though.
I'm sorry. I never was any good at mechanics.
difficult.
Just shine it on your face. That'll work.
Come on now, what am I doing?
Talking about your goal.
Put it in your mouth.
Oh. Okay, we're talking about Ron Goldman.
No, no, I said your mouth.
Okay, they want to talk about Ron Goldman.
Yeah, where does he fit in?
Well, where he fits in was, as I say, way back many, many years ago, how the gangster Mickey Cohen and Menachem Begin were operating. They had all of these very handsome young Italian guys working for them. They took them out of these very wealthy ladies in Beverly Hills in Hollywood, and they had a intelligence organization going. They found out business secrets from these ladies. Maybe their husband was a very wealthy businessman in a certain line of work. And all of this, it wasn't for just the fun of it. All of this was recorded and kept by this organization that they reported to. And so now we're talking about 1958, 1960, when this was happening with George Piscitelli, Ronnie, Joe DiCarlo, and Johnny Stampinato, and George and Sammy Lo Sr. All of those were these lover boys that were working for the Jewish element there, finding out what was going on. And also, as a sideline, Mickey Cohen was even making recordings. In those days, big old black recording of Lana Turner and all of these girls in the motel room, and he was selling them. Gee whiz, he made more money doing that than he did out the racetrack for 6 months stealing bets out there. So it was this type of thing, and it hasn't stopped. Now, Ron Goldman was engaged in the same type of activities, and he was finding out information from Nicole Simpson. Now, this information was going back to people like Stanley Scheinbaum, Norman Dorson, who are the police commissioners on the Los Angeles Police Department. Very wealthy, influential people. Now, O.J. was framed through people that knew and involved in Los Angeles Police Department, but not policemen. The police commissioners were the ones that were involved in it. And they were getting reports back from their lover boys out in Hollywood that O.J. was connecting with Louis Farrakhan, which upset the hierarchy in the ADL very, very much. Now, so they decided this goes back a little bit, Brett, to the Rodney King affair. They use everything. Anything that will start a riot, and it goes back to the race riot and revolution conspiracy that William P. Clark was involved in. Now, William P. Clark, as I said, he was, well, not only was the national security director of our country, he then became the Secretary of the Interior. Now, this goes exactly with what Dharma says. And he was mixed up very closely with a man by the name of Emilio Lagomasino in Ventura County. Emilio Lagomasino's son, Robert Lagomasino, was a congressman. And William P. Clark was with the security, national security directors at that time, and they would get in the same airplane with Ronald Reagan, fly out to Point Magoo, and from that point get into helicopters and fly to the ranches. Reagan to his, and William P. Clark to his ranch, Lagomasino to his big ranch out there. And while they're on the airplane, that's when they had the ear of Ronald Reagan. Well, now, I'm sorry that I vacillate, but I got to get back to what Brent is asking of Ron Goldman. Well, Ron Goldman was involved, and this is why his father is so upset, because Ron Goldman wasn't supposed to be killed. Now, these were the people that killed that pair were assassins, the same from Israel. And I show your records. I got my whole files. It was the subject of one of my articles in the Contact about how the rabbis in the Halacha, they've assassinated many people over here, but they always seem to get out of it. And I'm trying to keep my train of thought because it goes so many directions with Ron Goldman. Is there anything specific that...
If you tell them where Fred Goldman fits...
Well, Fred Goldman is in the hierarchy with Stanley Sheinbaum. See, Stanley, back in 1957 and 58, I was a detective sergeant on the Ventura Police Department. At that time, the chief of police, Bill, somebody knows his name, Bill of Los Angeles, was driving up, and they'd stop in Ventura and have coffee with me. Darrell Gates was his driver. Where they were going was up to Santa Barbara to where Stanley Sheinbaum and Norman Dorson, they all had this group up there that they called an organization for the studies of democracy. Well, what Bill, it's really slipped my mind, the chief of police.
Gates? No, Darrell Gates.
Parker.
There she
Parker,
goes. William Parker and Darrell Gates, they were going up to see Stanley Sheinbaum and his organization. And what Bill Parker was taking up there was, way back in those days, in the 58s, was records that Sheinbaum wanted on powerful people, politics, business, and everything in Los Angeles for his records. And at that time, Stanley Sheinbaum was promising Bill Parker something that he wanted real bad. He wanted to become the chief, the director of the FBI. Stanley Sheinbaum was mixed up with people that were so powerful that could have put him in that job if you want. However, he never got it. And so afterwards, and Darrell Gates was involved in all of this. He knows the whole story. Then Darrell Gates himself became chief of police. And in 19, I won't say the date because I don't recall it. It was within 2 weeks after the Rodney King affair. I took my affidavit with witnesses down. I was in Darrell Gates' office. He had six of his assistants, sergeants, secretaries, and everybody else. And there was a reporter that was a friend of his standing over there. When I gave him, hand-delivered this affidavit to him, telling him about this race riot and revolution, and that there was going to be terrible riots in L.A. Over this Rodney King thing. Well, he completely covered it up. There was nothing more said about it or anything. Sure enough, the riots came along. Now, William, and this is going to go right to what Doris is saying, and it just fits in a pattern, like a dovetail. William P. Clark, after he was a security director, national security director, he became the Secretary of the Interior. Now, what they had going was all the offshore, I'm forgetting where I'm at, I'm in Tehachapi, I'm thinking I'm in Santa Barbara or Ventura, but out there off the shore is all the islands where there were millions and millions of acres of oil in the water, underwater, drilling, and to be divided up with Chevron, Mobil Oil, and even with some with the Saudi Arabia. It was all mixed up together in oil and money. All this was being discussed on the big airplane, number one that they fly in, and Robert Lagomasino, who his father was Red Lagomasino, Emilio Lagomasino, who goes clear back to the old Prohibition days, made all of his money in the Bank of America with, somebody please tell me the name of the Italian that started Bank of America?
Giannini.
Okay. But Giannini, see, Giannini started, I thought he was asleep.
I'll have one.
you mentioned bank.
Giannini started the Bank of Italy. When I was a little kid, we used to go down and put a dollar bill in the Bank of Italy, and we got 4 cents back. My dad told me, every year you're going to get 4 cents. And I thought about that a lot of times. 4 cents for a dollar, I can buy a whole bunch of candy right down here right now for that dollar. Why should I put it in there? Well, as anybody knows, Giannini didn't make his fortune selling, like they try to tell you, selling apples out of an apple cart in San Francisco. It was narcotics, alcohol during the prohibition. And so when the prohibition was over, a red leg of machine, well, all right, let me tell you just a little bit more about during the Depression and the prohibition, the Italian bank, Mr. Giannini's bank, made so much money. They had vineyards. This was honest money. They were making money off their wine, and they worked hard, all those old Italian people. And but they were making so much money that then they decided that it was Italians was all one race. What do you call it?
Monopoly?
No, it was I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, they had to go more for all the people, not just Italians. They wanted everybody to come in, put there, so they changed it to the Bank of America. And I'll just take one little instance for, like, Lagomasino's in Ventura County. When they came over, land was cheap. They brought their vines over, and they raised grapes. And then they formed real estate companies, and they formed their banks, all above board, honest, and everything else. And the Bank of Italy started getting so wealthy that it was, and this is during the Depression, when everybody didn't have a dime. And they've got all this money, and so they become the Bank of America at that time. But during Prohibition, they were, Red Leg and Messina was involved all over the state, as were other Italian families in California, and they were putting their money in Bank of America, all this money that they were making in Prohibition, because they knew it wasn't going to last. Well, I remember when I was a kid, all of a sudden when we're going to school, there's bars. We're told not to go down this street because there's guys coming out of that bar drinking and all this and that. So at that time, the Jewish people more or less took over the judicial system, and Lagomasinos was involved in setting up the California State, what we call ABC, Alcohol Beverage Control. And he was involved in that, and it didn't take him long to find out, every time they were getting in trouble, no matter what you do or anything else, our system, your recourse is the courts. And every time he decided something was wrong, he'd go to court, he got beat every time. He couldn't figure it out. Here, I'm the powerful Italian people, own the Bank of America, but no matter whether it's a $50 deal or a $5 million deal, we go to court and we get beat. And he can't figure it out because the Jewish people were smart enough. When I got out of the Navy in 1945, I wasn't like all the rest of the, most of the guys that were smart. They worked on the night watch on the police department. They walked across the street to USC, went to law school. And some took police, majored in police administration. I was having too much fun working the street. And and they worked the desk, and I'm just talking now about what happened to the police department and why it's different now than it was in those days. All the guys, the policemen that were working on the desk, when we weren't booking somebody, we weren't out in the street booking somebody, they were sitting over here studying their books. At 8 o'clock in the morning, they went on the GI Bill across the street to USC, studied law, become lawyers. And then the next thing you know, these guys had never worked the street, didn't know anything about police department or work or anything else, actually, but still had been on the police department for years. They're the top administrators, and they're setting policy. Well, policy is one thing, and United States law is another thing. And when somebody tells you, you go to the bank, you go to these administrators, and they tell you, well, you can't do this because it's our policy. Well, the first thing that comes in your mind, all right, that's policy, but what's the law? What does the law say? You can't, your policy don't count because we got to go back to the law. See how far I digress? Now, I want to get one thing.
Ron Goldman.
Because I think I made one mistake here. I told a whole bunch of people that in the 20s and 30s I was raised in Venice. Now, a lot of people have been there. They've seen Venice on the TV. Lordy, lordy, all those guys going down there with their skateboards on and smoking marijuana at the same time. Venice wasn't like that in those days, believe me. It was different. And this is the change that's come about. I'm going to get back to Mr. Chalkins here because he aggravates me. I mean, I'm not going to go get my gun, but the guy aggravates me because here's what he says. And this guy is from nothing. I don't know who he is or what he's done for America, what he intends to do with it. But he says, here, please, maybe it is. He sat down this afternoon with a bright yellow 700-page volume called There's a Fish in the Courthouse. This is where I got mad. It was like sitting down with a soft-cover toxic waste dump. But I'm going to get back. And then he uses my name, and he says, Gary, why, I don't know the guy. And he says, I went to my mom. She's an old Jewish lady, and she thinks the word you're using, mishpuka, is right. There is a mishpuka. I said, well, I thank him for that. I mean, that shows that I'm not wrong from there. Well, to add on to that, a lot of you folks remember a guy by the name of George Duke Meejan, who was the governor of California. His intelligence agency, criminal agency, would write a report every year, and it was on the crime. He came out with this report to everybody. This really set the Jewish people off because he said, and I'll try to quote it as close as I can, the Jewish people have an organization that is in competition with the mafia in drug smuggling, drug peddling, and narcotics. I think that backs me up a little bit in the mishpuka thing, because after all, it's the governor of he's got a little bit of credibility. It's the governor of California saying this thing. Well, now we go back, and I sit here and I listen to Doris, and I realize exactly what she's saying. Everything that goes around is coming around, believe me. It's coming around for this 50 years that I'm telling you, 1945 when I got out of the Navy until now. They've had it all their way. But nothing lasts forever. Nothing. Rome didn't last forever, but our Constitution has lasted for over 200 years, and that's a lot more than a lot of governments have lasted. I'm going to say one more thing.
Well, that's because it has hardly been used.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Doris, I need help again.
Ron Goldman.
Oh, well, I mean, I thought you was going to... I mean, big help.
Fred Goldman. Fred Goldman.
All right, Fred Goldman is in the hierarchy of the Mishpuka...